Okay, welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. At the McNay, we're going to have this fantastic, I got to be so enthusiastic, I'm sorry, about this exhibit of Norman Rockwell. Norman Rockwell painted America from the dark days of the Depression and the Dust Bowl, and then we had the war effort and coming home from the war, and we had the growth and the prosperity of the Eisenhower administration and the Civil Rights era, that struggle all captured by one American artist, Norman Rockwell. Did I say Alex Ross?
He almost did.
Okay. Anyway, all right. So Norman Rockwell. And anyway, so with me in the studio to talk about this exhibit, we want to hear from you. Give us a call. Talk about your Norman Rockwell memories. If you had a painting, a print of a Norman Rockwell in your home, how it impacted you and your life and kind of captured what family life meant to you. Give us a call. 614-8980. With me in the studio to talk about it, Bill Kiego from the McNay and Lori Norton Moffitt from, you're from, what is your organization?
Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
So you guys have all the goods right there, all the Norman Rockwell stuff. So
we have the most wonderful collection of Rockwell's work.
And you brought it a sample of it here to San Antonio. What are we going to see at the McNay when it opens on Wednesday?
Well, you're going to see a marvelous array of both original work, original publications that Rockwell painted for, such as the Saturday Evening Post. And I think the special quality of this exhibition are the reference photographs that he took of his models as he coached and directed and posed them for these paintings. So it really explores the artist's working process, his use of photography in his artwork, and a deep understanding of his working process and how he achieved a finished painting.
So a lot of people, they're not aware of the Norman Rockwell process. They see the beautiful painting and they think, well, he sat there in a room by himself and just sort of dabbled with some sketches. But actually, there was a very controlled, precise process, because he was turning out a tremendous amount of work with great regularity. Mm-hmm. And so he had photographs of neighborhood kids and people and staged these events and took photographs of them and turned that into the paintings, right?
Well, that's right. He was really trained as a classical artist. He was trained in the same techniques as Rembrandt. At the time he was in art school, artists were taught human anatomy and how to draw, and went through many stages of deliberation in preparation of a final piece. He groomed his canvases in classical ways. He built his paint layers up, and he developed a working process, particularly later in his life, when he began to use photography as a tool for posing his models, and he directed them very much the way a stage director or film director would go about creating a film.
Or you would doing special effects today. You know,
that's right.
Because what you do today is that you get components and then you layer them together. And that's what he was doing. He was taking photographs of individual children or people in different poses, and then he would layer them into one composition, much like you would with a rendering process that you would today with special effects.
Yes, that's a very good parallel in today's world. And in fact, I sometimes try to explain this by asking people to think about collage, where you're putting many different pieces together, and he might take the pose of one model and he would take the head of another and the hair color of yet a third to actually create the finished composition. So the photographs weren't always reproduced exactly the way he had them posed, but he would put his own personalization into telling the finished story, because it's really about storytelling and narrative. All the details that go into these paintings is with the aim to tell you the story that he's trying to communicate.
And there is a huge story as you walk through the exhibit of the McNay, and you start at the very beginning, you see his early works, and you walk through Dr. Kiego, you see a story told.
Yeah, you do. And I mean, I think the first things you see in the show are just before, the first painting you see is just before he used photography. And you see there's a real difference in the way he painted. And after he started using photography, I think the paintings and the covers become much more exact. And he really, I always refer to it as almost archaeological, in the sense that you can now trace our culture through those covers and through those paintings with accuracy, because he was so careful about how he used each element. And in some of those compositions, there were 100 photographs taken, and he took the pieces that he felt were most significant and then would add what he felt was needed for the final image.
Why did he save so much material? Well, I mean, all this stuff is archived. Why?
Well, we actually have a vast archive at the Rockwell Museum.
But he was creating commercial work. It was for the magazine cover. It was for ads for the Plymouth, you know, car. Why did people think, well, I need to save this? Because at the time, you know, this was just illustration. It was not worthy. It was not considered high art.
Well, you're right. I think that's an interesting question, because I think he was very self-conscious of his process and had a sense that these works were larger than life and larger than the immediate moment they were going to be published. When you look at how large he painted, and you look at a painting that's 4 or 5 feet tall and square or 6 feet long, and you realize it was going to be reproduced down into a scale of maybe 10 or 12 inches in the magazine, you begin to understand the magnitude of detail and care that went into these paintings. And he was very meticulous, and I think sometimes he probably kept all the working photos in case he wanted to refer back to them for another painting in the future. But it became a tidy process, and he was always moving on to work on the next piece, so I don't think he spent too much time thinking about the last one once he had finished it. So his studio assistant would box those photographs up and box those negatives up, and they would just be stored in his archive and studio. And we have digitized all of this material now, about 40,000 records and photographs, which are available, fully searchable on our website. And it's a selection of these that you're seeing in the exhibition at the McNay, showing this working process. And the archival, the photo collection in and of itself, really is an archaeological resource, because in it you see the changes in clothing, you see how people lived, you see their real scarf
shoes.
Even
his color palette changed as through the years.
Oh, yeah.
Especially
yeah.
when you get to the 60s, it was definitely reflected the era of the time, the different types of colors that were chosen.
And the surface of the painting changes drastically.
Right. You clearly see the influence of pop art on that palette. You know, you're right, the vibrant colors, the yellows, the greens that change in that decade. He remained contemporary for more than 65 years of painting.
Remarkable. So Norman Rockwell, he became a name. When did he become a name? Not just a person who was an illustrator and that, okay, that was going to be something, that he did something.
Well, we do have that Rockwellian adjective in our vocabulary now, I think, to conjure up both a sense of a simpler time.
But as a brand that it was pursued, like, I need, get me Norman Rockwell, you know, that type of a, he became a big shot.
Yeah, what's astonishing is how early that happened in his career. By 1924, when he was 30 years old, he was profiled with a full multi-page profile in the Saturday Evening Post as a celebrity. Illustrators were celebrities, the way we think of sports figures and movie stars today. The illustrators
were rock stars.
They were the rock stars. So the seal of approval to have a Rockwell cover on your magazine or have him do an advertising piece was a little bit added value, if you will, and it was like the good housekeeping seal of approval. And I think this was particularly notable with the images done for the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. We want to hear from callers. What do you think about Norman Rockwell, his portrayal of America? Give us a call, 614-8980. And you're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Wednesday, opening at the McNay, a special exhibit looking at Norman Rockwell and his process, how he created these iconic images that mean so much to many Americans. And with me in the studio to talk about that, we have Lori Norton Moffitt of the Rockwell Museum and Dr. Bill Kiego from the McNay. And we're going to go ahead and go to the phones. Toro wants to join us, and he wants to add to our conversation about Norman Rockwell. Go ahead, Toro.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to share this. I remember when I was a kid, we would fight for those free Coca-Cola calendars by Norman Rockwell. And it was so funny that you're bringing this thing to San Antonio, because it's so foreign for us, especially when you see these images of real life of what's happening other parts in the world, that especially here in America, then you try to relate to it in his work here in San Antonio. And it was just so fun to see his work on Coca-Cola calendars. That's my very vivid from childhood, and that's what it was just so amazing. Then to add a little bit more, we saw an actual one, an actual drawing that came from John Leeper that used to run the Magnet a long time ago, and he would bring one piece, like, I don't know where he would get them, but he would show it to people, just like stuff like that. So,
all right, Toro.
It's great. It's great that it's coming to town.
Yes. Thank you for your comment. So I guess Toro is talking about the fact that Norman Rockwell, he was up in upstate New York and Vermont and that area. So he was capturing his part of America. Here in San Antonio, I mean, I would say, you know, I could see some influence of on maybe Jesse Trevino, you know, his paintings of San Antonio. Kind of in his own style, kind of capturing Norman Rockwell moments.
I think that emphasis on daily life, everyday life, is something they have in common.
His mother hanging the laundry in the backyard or the street corner in Zarzamora, things like that. Certainly a worthy comparison. Norman Rockwell worked for Saturday Evening Post, or that was his client. He also worked for advertisers like Coca-Cola and Plymouth and other major advertisers. So how did he go from being a illustrator, you know, a guy getting the paycheck, and to becoming a great American artist that has transcended, you know, advertising?
Well, I think you have to start with the public affection that he was always held in by the American people, and really people all around the world who received the Saturday Evening Post on military bases and other parts of the world. And he always enjoyed this public following. And it wasn't until really the middle of the century when abstract expressionism and the modernist art movements moved in with full force that the role of the critic became a dividing line between American illustration art and the more contemporary art forms. I don't know if you want to say anything about that, Bill.
No, I think that's true. And I think that Rockwell, as you said, had already achieved a fame and an affection in people's hearts. And I think the reason why he maintained that despite all those changes in terms of the fine art world is the fact that those images were not just illustrations. They touched a deeper chord about American life and what people wanted to see in terms
of... But it was aspirational.
Aspirational, and really there's a certain quality of depth and emotion in those pictures that comes across that isn't in every kind of illustration.
And we also see the transition of America from very rural to urban.
Right.
You know, so early, you know, we see him as he does this nostalgia, very much how life was idyllic and back on the farm, and in the city, not always so idyllic.
Well, it's also a narrative quality that he always was able to capture, telling a story in a picture, which not everyone can do equally well. He could do it, I think, supremely well.
For example, I'm looking at this picture of the homecoming Marine and the mechanic and his neighbors and the young boys in the neighborhood sitting in the garage welcoming home the war hero. This is a scene played out over and over again through time, played out right now in our own communities, the homecoming hero, the soldier coming home from war, being welcomed by the family and community. These are timeless images, and some certainly are aspirational, and some are very real.
Some are real.
What about the one about the father, the farmer, sitting on the runner of the truck or whatever, with his son who's getting ready to go off to college?
And that's one that so many parents can identify with. It doesn't matter when it was painted or drawn. It hits you. And it obviously hit him because he did that at a time when his boys were leaving home.
It was very autobiographical. And if you look closely at the expressions of the father and the son in that painting, they're masterful. In the father's face is the wistfulness, the sadness, the recognition his son may not ever move back home again. The boy is in his suit. He's going off to college. The college banner's on his suitcase. And Norman Rockwell achieves this marvelous pose that is midway between anticipation and apprehension. Mm-hmm. And you see he's scared and he's excited at the same time that the father is wistful and sad. Just magnificent.
And then there's the most iconic Norman Rockwell painting is the Thanksgiving turkey being presented to the table. Everyone is so excited. This has been parodied and, you know, honored so many times by pretty much every medium. Yeah. You know, so what was there a story behind that?
Well, isn't it astonishing that Rockwell's works are still used for contemporary parody as the icon and the foil against which a modern idea is played? And we see that over and over again. The story behind that is one of the four freedoms, and Norman Rockwell was looking to illustrate these ideals that President Roosevelt had articulated to the nation and to the world of why we were going to enter the war, to preserve these four basic human rights: the freedom of speech, freedom to worship, freedom from fear, and freedom from want. And he wanted to find these quintessential American moments that could convey in one image, one picture, tell the story of that freedom, take these very lofty ideals and bring them down to a tangible everyday life. And he felt that the Thanksgiving meal around the table was the most recognizable American moment and showed a sense of freedom from want. But he was very aware, too, that there were families in our country who were hungry, just as there remain today. And if you look at the table, it's during the war. It's a beautiful table, but it's quite restrained, both in its food and in its simplicity, the white-on-white tones and silver tones. But the focus is still on that turkey and this American holiday. I think freedom of speech is also emblematic. He chooses the setting of a small town meeting in a small New England town where the individual featured is standing up to speak his mind. He's dressed in clothing differently from all the gentlemen surrounding him.
He's like a working Joe.
Yeah, he's a working guy, and he's got his, you know, mechanics grease under his fingernails, but everybody is listening very respectfully to what he had to say. And I think there's a lot we can learn in that painting today.
Now, I want to get to the civil rights era. So Norman Rockwell leaves the Saturday Evening Post, and he's able to, is he granted more freedom? Now are we seeing things that are, he's taking on the violence in the South, and his graphic and...
Well, Look magazine had a different editorial policy, right? Laurie.
That's right. I think what you see reflected is that change in editorial policy from a very conservative Saturday Evening Post to a very liberal Look magazine, also in a decade where our nation was exploding in its unrest and our sense of changing values, our belief in social justice. You had the Vietnam War, you had the Civil Rights Movement.
Right. And there's one painting of that era that's in the White House. Tell me about that.
There is a painting that President Obama asked to borrow from our collection called The Problem We All Live With, which was the historical moment of integrating the first elementary school in New Orleans. And Ruby Bridges was the little girl who integrated her first elementary school. And this was emblematic of the many schools in the nation that were going through desegregation as a result of the Brown versus Board of
Education.
Right,
and so you see the little girl in her pigtails. She's an African-American little girl dressed very nicely, being escorted into the school. But all you see of the, I guess, FBI agents.
The U.S. Marshals.
U.S. Marshals is them the hit below the waist. But you see their imposing figure. You see on the wall the splattering of a tomato that obviously there is some tension there.
Yeah, you see the epithets drawn on the wall. And the Marshals are headless because their personas were not important. It was the sense of power and authority they represented.
Okay, I want to get to this phone. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I want to get to this phone call real quick. Diane, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to comment that my husband and I are from the Massachusetts area and grew up there. And in fact, my father-in-law knew Norman Rockwell as a neighbor more than, you know, also the famous artist, but in a real neighborhood kind of setting. And in fact, for my in-law's the 50th wedding anniversary, which would have been in 1972, he wrote Mr. Rockwell and asked if he would paint a portrait of my in-laws. And he was so nice, he wrote back and said that his schedule was so busy that he couldn't do it, but he was honored to have been asked. And my father-in-law has that letter still, and is probably as proud of that letter as he would have been of a portrait.
So that's great.
What a nice story.
He was just a wonderful neighbor and friend to that community.
Now, thank you so much, Diane. We loved hearing that story. I'm sure you're going to hear people have stories like that. You know, the people, if they posed for him, you know, the stories they must have, you know, these are real people.
We have a lot of stories from the models who posed for him, and a nice collection of letters similar to the one you just described. He always took the time to answer every letter he received. And we have boxes, 20 boxes of fan mail, in addition to his business correspondence. And he was meticulous about answering everyone.
We were talking about a little girl who he used many times, and the famous first picture was the little girl in front of the mirror.
Yes.
And then he liked her so much, she was a tomboy, and he loved her look, and he kept using her repeatedly. And you've been in touch with her in recent years. And
okay.
This was, yeah.
Out of time, the exhibit, it just takes your breath away. Thanks for bringing it to San Antonio. Thank you for bringing it to San Antonio.
Such a pleasure.
And it's at the McNay. Opens Wednesday.
Opens Wednesday and it's up through all the summer until the beginning of September.
We're out of time. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.
Thanks, Dave.
Paul Flav produces the show. Oversight is provided by TPR Program Director Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor, and production assistance comes from Catherine Dixon. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.
Coming up tomorrow on The Source, while the national unemployment rate hovers at 7.5%, Iraq and Afghanistan veterans face an even higher unemployment rate of 10.8%. Overall, more than 750,000 veterans are facing unemployment. What's being done to help our returning servicemen and women find work? We'll take your calls and emails. Join us for The Source tomorrow afternoon at 3 on KSTX. The Source is made possible through contributions to the TPR Community Engagement Fund.
For 2 days next week, nearly 2,000 entrepreneurs, bureaucrats, and medical types are going to descend on Washington Health-a-palooza. Next time on Marketplace from APM.
You can hear Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on News and Views at 89.1 KSTX.
From the KSTX Community Events Calendar, the San Antonio State Hospital's Trinkets and Treasures resale shop is open tomorrow from 9:30 to 3:30. The film Brave will be screened at Hemisphere Park's Movies by Moonlight tomorrow at 8:30. And Broadway Reach Community Weekend is Thursday through Sunday at 7 cultural institutions along Broadway. Find details on these events and more at tpr.org. The Community Events Calendar is a public service of KSTX.
This is KSTX San Antonio. Good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock.